we ought to make it available for sale. Now, I guess in terms of like budget questions or whatever, what if something is put up for sale like that, where does the money go? How does that?
It goes into the cash fund. We have some books, a book that Richard Mettler wrote some years back on orientation, cane travel, and we sell that occasionally. So our biggest constraint or restraint is that we don't have money to put into marketing. You know, we could probably sell a lot of these if we did a marketing blitz out there, but you know, we could sure have something on the website. Actually, the thing itself, you'll be able to go to the website and watch the movie. And I don't know if that's done yet.
No, I haven't received it yet.
I think one of the biggest uses is not so much necessarily to make money,
right,
but to circulate the, you know, this is obviously, you know, going to schools and groups, and I mean, you know, mm-hmm. it's so well done. I mean, and it, you know, it makes so many good points that. And it's not, it doesn't take that long to play. I just think it'd be a good tool to use as, you know.
And that's Absolutely. Definitely what it's going to be used for.
Yeah, that was the main purpose of it. You know, I was just wanting to know, in the event that we do that,
put the money back
where does
into
it,
the.
Well, I know I'd like to get one, you know, for the Omaha chapter of the NFB.
And your family members, then.
Yeah, Christmas presents. So.
Everybody who is in the video will receive their own copy. And
$100.
So,
Pearl, I was going to add, we also sold the encounters, mm-hmm. the encounter videos.
Right.
You know, we had a number of responses from around mm-hmm. the country. I don't know if we still do. But with that, we had flyers that were available with information for ordering.
Mm-hmm. Have you decided on a price for
No, it? We haven't. Do you have any ideas?
No.
What do you like?
I have no idea what
Well, I would think, sell for. You know, 25 would probably be enough. You know, it first depends on how much it costs to, you know, to, because, I mean, you probably want to take them into some video place and have them duplicated out,
right?
And
right.
find out what that cost is, and then mm-hmm. you know, certainly don't want to lose money on it, and make a little bit couldn't mm-hmm. hurt.
I don't think $20 or $25 would be. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that'd be well within
reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I like to show that to the Lions Club because they, of course, they work with the blind, but their idea of blindness is rather skewed.
Yes, it is.
Their attitude is all these. Blind people are, you know, they need our help.
Yeah, they're not into empowering. They're into
that's right. The whole
custodial help.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind buying mm-hmm. one and donating it to the college I attended in Sioux City. There, they have an entire class, social work class, on working with people with disabilities, which was a result of my suggestion, and. Donate it to that school to use for that class. Mm. That would be great.
That's a good idea.
Yes, okay. It is.
All right.
Okay, we're at this point we're ready for the focus topic, which at our last meeting we decided would be informed choice.
Okay. I'm going to give you some information about what informed choice is and what its role is in providing rehabilitation services. And then we don't have a presenter per se, but we'll have staff here give whatever comments they have, and then we can discuss to whatever length you wish. The Rehab Act, as you know, has developed over time. In 1973, the policy statement clarified that the activities and projects funded under the Act must be, quote, carried out in a manner consistent with the principles of respect for individual dignity, personal responsibility, self-determination, and pursuit of meaningful careers based on informed choice of individuals with disabilities." End quote. Then in 92, the principle of informed choice itself was introduced into the statute and expanded opportunities for people with disabilities having a real direct involvement in developing their programming and their plan for employment. And then in 1998, the amendments strengthened the concept even further and added requirements, or strengthened previous requirements related to informed choice, adding requirements for expanded opportunities, for increased participation in developing and implementing their program for voc rehab services. The policy then from 98 states, quote, "Individuals who are applicants for such programs or eligible to participate in such programs must be active and full partners in the vocational rehabilitation process, making meaningful and informed choices. One, during assessments for determining eligibility and voc rehab needs, and two, in the selection of employment outcomes for individuals, services needed to achieve outcomes, and entities providing such services and the methods used to secure such services," end quote. So really, informed choice is a decision-making process that occurs throughout the entire process that a person is applying for and a client of a VR agency. And the key legal requirements are informing each applicant and eligible individual about opportunities to exercise informed choice throughout the process, assisting individuals, and when I say individuals now, I mean applicants and people who have been determined eligible, assisting individuals in exercising informed choice in making decisions related to their provision of assessment services, provide or assist individuals to get the information they need to exercise their informed choice, and so including information about services, providers, and methods, develop and implement flexible procurement policies and methods to assure choice, ensuring the availability and scope of choice is consistent with the obligations of the agency. And so it just really embeds requirements at every step of the way. Let's see, and then the key aspects that are, or how it kind of takes shape in the implementation of informed choice is that the individual or his or her representative makes decisions related to every step of the process, has a range of options from which to make decisions, or where possible the opportunity to create new options that will meet the individual's specific rehab needs, has access to sufficient information about consequence of various options, has skills for evaluating the information and making decisions or developing new options, and makes decisions in ways that reflect the individual's strengths, resources, priorities, concerns, abilities, capabilities, and interests, and takes personal responsibility to the extent possible for implementing the chosen options. So that's kind of the overview of what informed choice is. Both words in the term are important. The informed piece of it and the choice piece are very much, they're substantive words that go a lot to explaining what the process is all about.
I think a lot of people think about choice, but they forget about that informed part and just say, "I have choice." You hear a lot of blind people, well, they're not giving me the choice, but then, I want to be a pilot, they won't give me my choice. Well, that's not an informed choice. That's a real problem.
One of the ways we like to inform is not just giving people a lot of
unuseful information and full of technicalities or verbosities, but relevant information, and the best way to do it is to expose them to both consumers and organizations in Nebraska.
When it comes to the technologies, I mean, there's, you know, the different technologies out there. I mean, is there any requirement that every variety of voice synthesis, voice, every, you know, adaptive thing be presented to them, or how does that generally, the mechanics of that usually work out?
Carlos, you want to speak to that?
I was just going to say, there was this long silence, and I was going to offer to talk about how, I'm going to say it from the Omaha district of what happens when we develop an IPE with somebody, but we sit down and we go through each element of service and talk, and I'll take technology as an example. You know, at the time we're developing an IPE, a person can be very new to blindness, and they may be pretty unaware of all of these things. But each step of their program, we're constantly reviewing it. And it might be that we'll redevelop that when they get further into it because they're much more aware of blindness and what their needs are. But at the time we're developing it, we actually talk about all the different note-taking devices. And sometimes they're so early, they're more apt to want to work more with maybe a type and speak versus a braille and speak, or something with a refreshable braille display, because braille is kind of a foreign concept to them. Whereas later, they're very, very interested in braille, and a lot of times we'll go back to wanting to look at a braille and speak or a braille light. So we actually show and try to give hands-on exposure to all of this so that they understand what we're talking about at the time we're developing all of that. That includes speech packages. We have several different programs in Omaha and also around the state. It's kind of hard to have everything everywhere just because the cost, but we have it that we're able to demonstrate it for people so that they can make an informed decision. So does that kind of help them?
Well, I guess also where I was going with that is that, you know, you have your big, you know, the Freedom Scientifics, the big kahunas. And then you have, because I noticed like this outfit from New Zealand, is it, that's got a, yeah, that has a small little Palm Pilot kind of, you know, braille device that looks, you know, it sounds like it's, you know, a lot of people really like it. And my question would be that, almost like any agency that's, or anybody that's presenting technology, you know, you're how would somebody, a technology representative, do they contact the state, or if they have some new widget? Because I mean, it's be common sense that we'd be predisposed to go with the Freedom Scientifics. You know, they're the biggest, the most established, but somebody might have a, you know, something that works very well, but how do they communicate, or how does the state evaluate, or I mean, it's
a lot of times, you know, the moment they have something new, you know, we know about it, or a lot of times they're marketing it to agencies such as ours. So we meet with them, we get the information. Oftentimes they'll try to set up an opportunity to come and demonstrate their products too. So anyone that we're aware of, we try to get the word out about that so that they can come. And also any clients that we're working with so that they have a chance to, you know, see those products demonstrated. Sometimes they will loan their products to us to be able to demonstrate with clients because they're very interested in us knowing about their products. So that's, you know, HumanWare has spent a lot of time here in Nebraska.
And does Jonathan, the one that first looks at it and decides that this looks like something better?
Actually, I think it's the whole technology team.
Yeah, and also clients.
And clients, that's exactly right.
Yeah, because they are the ones who use it every day. Mm-hmm. And like I remember a case in which the Braille note was started to get, and we didn't know much about it. So a client said it was fine, and then we got one part stopped using it and learned more and more about it. So we make suggestions. That's why I was commenting in the beginning, being exposed to other clients, to other blind people, is part of the informed choice, because they are the ones who are using the technology, they are the ones who are learning more about new things, they are the ones who tell us, the commission, about new things, and vice versa. But the clients are the ones who use it every day, and they inform us, and they inform others. And that's only just a part of technology, but so other different things, like about their rights and writing their IPE, or rights on other different things.
And also not just clients, but people, blind people in the community who don't happen to be clients.
Exactly.
And other staff. It's not like the tech staff are the only ones. We often will get, somebody will happen to get information from a mail list or something they've seen, and they'll forward it to the rest of the staff.
And I just didn't have a chance to complete that, but I was just going to say the technology staff, but oftentimes what we'll do is we'll, when we learn about something, we'll ask somebody to evaluate it and give us input on how it's working, you know, what's the pros and the cons, so then we can share that information with people.
It kind of sounded like in when this topic came up that there's some controversy involved in it. What aspects do you run into that get people, concerned, or what kinds of concerns are in this area that some people would find it controversial?
In technology, you mean?
Well, no, I mean, in this back to just the whole broad subject of informed choice.
I guess what Bill was saying, mm-hmm. Many people forget about the informed part, and they think the choice is, okay, I want $10,000 equipment when I don't even know how to use it, or I don't know how to apply, versus a $500 equipment, which would be enough. Or sometimes, if the fact that you give me $500 equipment that is coming to limit it more than $10,000 equipment that I really need for my job. So it's the informed part, the main part.
And let's get off of technology a little bit and talk about choice of employment goal and just overall program. When it, there's kind of both extremes, an individual who says, I want to be an airline pilot and you should pay for me to do that, and the kind of the old, although it still exists in some states, way that rehab happens is the counselor goes in and tells the client what their capabilities are and what they can achieve and what they cannot achieve, and really didn't ask that person at all. So it's making sure that the counselor's expertise and resources and knowledge are tied in with the client's individual interests and capabilities and goals.
Is there a, when the counselor evaluates, is there kind of a, some kind of, what kind of assessment do they do of their ability? Is there anything to determine their intelligence level? Is that something?
You mean, do we use assessment tools?
Yeah, what kind of assessment tools?
We really kind of stay away from assessment tools too much, because a lot of them, existing tools, are not really standardized for use with the blind. But each counselor works with each individual client in a way that seems to most, you know, fit that need. They may do self-directed employment searches or career searches, or, you know, they have a lot of tools available, and where it's appropriate to the individual, they use whatever's appropriate. And if we need an assessment from some entity, we'll, you know, pay for that where it's appropriate. But it's so individualized, which of course is the direction of the Rehab Act, and so we don't just do a standard assessment.
Well, maybe this has all changed, but way back when, I think I was a senior in high school, and I came down to this very building and did some assessments. I mean, one of them was an IQ test.
Right.
And so you know, evidently my IQ was high enough that they didn't stop talking to me. But that kind of stuff's not done anymore.
It's done where needed, but we don't just routinely put
so it's not a routine,
through,
yeah.
Putting the pegs in the holes kind of thing.
Because I don't think they had any special reason to suspect that my IQ was needed to be.
Right.
Need to be determined.
Sure, and you know, we have the experience time. Of the person, their grades, their jobs, if they've done some work, I mean, the kinds of things they've done. There's a lot of just exploration between the counselor and the client about abilities. And
anymore, getting into schools, they just don't take anybody anymore. I mean, you have to have certain grade averages and such.
Right.
So I'm assuming that if a person has the requisite grade averages to get into one of the Nebraska colleges, that's going to be permitted, and nobody's really going to have a problem with that. I mean, if they want to say, I want to go to college, that's, and they can get in, then that's not something that's going to be debated. Or what kind of, would they, if they apply to a college and get in, I mean, is there a chance that commission wouldn't pay for it?
The only thing I could think of is if there were other factors, whether it was health or personality. I mean, you know, like if they kept getting arrested for theft, and you know, I mean, I don't know what. It would really be extreme situations that the counselor would feel gave strong evidence that, in fact, that wasn't going to be something that was going to be successful. And maybe Nancy or Carlos can give you a specific, but that in general, you know.
I was just going to throw out when you say health, because obviously we deal with some people who have some serious
right.
health problems. And what if their doctor, their prognosis is this person's probably got 2 years to live, and they want to, I mean, do we have to get into that?
No, because who knows if they're right, you know. I mean, we could all leave here, walk across the street, and not live another day, so who knows?
Most doctors say that black people cannot do this.
That's right.
When I'm sure someone came and said, oh, I want to go to Creighton Med School and become an ophthalmologist, I think they would sort of veto that, but that'd be an extreme.
But along with that, I think with the health issue is that if, you know, in order to make sure that people are achieving their goal, if it was a health issue and they really couldn't go full-time,
right.
we'd ask for a letter from the doctor and we would support them on a part-time basis.
Yes,
you know,
and that's
anything that would reduce the barriers to their success. You know, we really take a hard look at that.
Right.
When I was in law school, I had a fella from Louisiana. He couldn't read Braille, couldn't use his hand and so forth, and he couldn't brief the cases. And I don't know what agency sent him to Creighton to go through law school, but they sure misjudged that situation, because he just didn't have the ability to do it. He had the intelligence, but he didn't have the tools. If you don't have the tools, you're not going to get too far.
And that's really why our initial counseling and training, both in the field and in the center, are so crucial. You know, it just because you're smart doesn't mean you can succeed in an academic setting or any other setting. So that confidence, the tools, the belief that yes, I can do this, and if I don't know how to do a particular piece of it, I can contact the people that will help me figure out how to accomplish it. You know, it's a process.
Can I make another quote? This is a little scenario that just happened to me last week. There is an individual that relocated to Omaha for employment from another state, and I received a call from their counselor saying that they were coming. And I actually met this person at the bus station late at night when she came in, and she was going to start her employment the next day. So we were chatting on the way to her motel, and she was telling me about how her actual goal was computer programmer, but the counselor had them go through this training to be certified in Microsoft, and that she could just do this job to get a little experience, and then she could go to school on her own. And so, you know, when we're talking about choice, this isn't a choice. This isn't her goal. She didn't get a chance to, you know, fulfill her goal. The agency got a closure, and she's still working on her goal. You know?
Right.
So, you know, that's a good example of looking at the whole picture when we're talking about people, and that we're really listening to them about what they want to be doing with their lives. This isn't about our program, but it's about their program, and there are bosses, and we need to make sure that that happens.
Yeah, one of the things that has come up to me a couple of times here in Nebraska is there, you know, back to the technology thing, is that we do seem to have an emphasis on, when it comes to screen readers, on the use of JAWS, and that there isn't as much emphasis on maybe some of the competitors like Window Eyes, I think it is, or that type of thing. You know, when anybody has said anything about that to me, I've said, you know, I've asked if they have inquired about it and found out, or just, you know, come to some kind of a conclusion based on having been around people who are using one or the other. And a lot of times that's what it is, you know, is making an assumption but not having raised the question. And I think part of informed choice is not only being informed from the outside, but also if you perceive something to be a certain way and you think that it is that way because somebody has made a determination or whatever, or if you don't know why it's that way, that it is part of your job as a human being, I mean, whether you're blind or not, but in this case we're talking about blind people, to raise issues, to try not to yourself operate out of assumptions. But, you know, to raise the issue, first of all, if it really is an issue to you, to people who can make a difference in having raised it or whatever, and then to go forth and try to find out whether what you're thinking is an assumption or is a fact or is the way it is because one thing is better than another. Because, you know, when a person takes a class at the university or anywhere else, they don't go in and say and tell the instructor what book the instructor is going to use and what the program is going to be and what the expectations are and all of that. I mean, you know, that isn't what informed choice is either. And I think that, you know, when we're talking about what can become controversial sometimes, it is those kinds of things where people either think that, you know, something is happening because there's been a deliberate decision made to exclude something else or whatever, or where people think of choice as meaning I'm in control and I tell the entity I'm dealing with what it's going to do, which presupposes any kind of program or just kind of eliminates that would be the case. And so I think if we're going to really help people as a commission board to understand what it is that informed choice is, and if we're going to learn from, you know, the staff what the concept is according to how things are done, we need to be mindful too, not only of what Pearl read in bureaucratese or, you know, whatever language that was, but also how it plays out in everyday situations like Pearl and Nancy and Carlos have been talking about. And it is part of our job as a board to help people understand, you know, based on getting informed ourselves, what it is that's really going on a day-to-day basis. And there are tough decisions that have to be made. you know, there, not everybody is going to just, you know, say, okay, I want to go to college, and I'll go to the least expensive one there is. You know, if the only goal is to get a college education, then it probably doesn't matter where that person goes. But if the goal is to not only have a certain kind of a degree, but also to deal with a certain kind of employment after that degree has been earned, then there are other considerations that need to be made. And, you know, the person that Nancy was talking about where the goals really weren't thought about or considered or whatever by the person who was supposed to be helping that person to not only make the goals but to realize them, that's a real problem. You know, I think that person's lucky to have moved here. but we have to, I think we do need to always be mindful that it isn't a cut and dried thing, and it can get complicated, and often does. And I think that's why it got raised in the first place as a focus topic for us to think about and to really look at.
Well, it goes back to the first thing that we started this meeting off with, the mission. One of the first mission of the commission was to empower the blind, and that's informed choice. That's their first introduction to being empowered. And I mean, they have to be flexible also. You can't, you know, walk into your employer and say, yeah, I want to work here, but, you know, oh, by the way, I want to use a Mac. Yeah. And the employer's not going to be too interested in that suggestion, more than likely.
Well, I know a person, she doesn't live in the state, but she's a law school graduate. She had several chances for a job, but she had a shopping list. When she went in that interview at the law firm of the county attorney's office, she had this shopping list. And I know they realized, well, we have to hire her. We can hire this person over here. And he doesn't have the shopping list. She does, you know, and who gets the job? So you have to get the equipment you need, but be prudent. Mm-hmm. It's be prudent in everything you do, in fact, that you can't demand without putting something out yourself. I think a lot of blind people forget that. Society, I'm blind now, it's society's responsibility. Well, to a certain extent it is, but it's their responsibility too to equip themselves and take advantage of every opportunity. A lot of them don't do that. They get mad and quit the program.
Yeah, and then there are people on the other end who think that any request of any kind is an imposition on somebody or is, you know, not something that they should be able to have because, after all, somebody else might need it or they aren't worthy of it or, you know, whatever. And so I think there are both extremes, and I think we need to try to, as usual, help people to find balance. Mm-hmm. Does anybody have any other questions or comments on that subject? I do appreciate all of you have brought to the discussion, because it is an ongoing one, and it's
I have one request. Can we take a 5-minute potty break? You don't want to, I know you want to move.
Okay,
on.
We have, let's see, what time is it? It is now 11:11. So if we come back at
11:20,
then we should be able to hopefully move along through the rest of the items on the agenda. Resume. And we're now ready for the old business. And we always have our materials update, and I always think that one of the things that it's good for us to do is to kind of just quickly go through some of the kinds of things that we've received so that it's part of our record, and that way if there is anybody who wants to, for whatever reason, receive any of the material that we have received that is public information, that it's available. We got the materials about the the EQ test. We've been talking about tests and things like that. Also, information about the JAWS maintenance agreements. The ongoing information concerning the meeting with us and the commission staff, which we now do have a date for. And a lot of the information about the Nebraska information system, including the contract and all of that interesting to read information. And some of the proposals for the New Mexico conference, that's been really interesting to get. And the encouragement for people to subscribe to the NCBVI list. We've talked about that a little bit today. I'm glad to know that at least we're up by 10 from what we were the last time we met. We have received two, I believe, of the past focus reports. Terry Harris and Fatosh have submitted them, and I don't think I missed any. If I did, that now's the time to let me know. One of them, let's see. There were numbers in Terry's that I didn't know quite what they meant, but you know, I haven't followed up and checked on that, but I'm not really sure. You know, it was in the one that had to do with the 64 different kind of, you know, not the actual report, but the thing that had where the locations are and stuff. Did you guys understand what that meant? Those little numbers that were in there? I feel like I'm talking to the...
I'm not sure. I'm sure what you're...
I'm trying to think of what it is.
Yeah, where there was a listing of locations, and there were numbers by some of them, which I'm not sure what they meant. You know, it was long enough ago that we had that report, and I thought, you know, if this goes into a focus packet or whatever, I, for one, wouldn't know what it meant. But I'm assuming that would be able to be modified in such a way that people like me would know what it meant then.
I'd be glad to go back and double-check that and have Terry revise it to clarify that.
Okay, because that is confusing to me. And then we've received materials from Cheryl Poff about deafblind, not only the minutes, but also the, you know, agendas and things like that, and her dream. That was kind of interesting. And then, of course, the client statistics and our testimony from the when we've spoken to the legislature. And the grant information concerning the Diabetes Alternative Project grant. I don't know, is there anything new on?
No.
Okay. So, you know, that was disappointing, but at least there was something to be, you know, to look at for the next time around. And things like the fish philosophy, talking about humor in the workplace and that kind of thing. The ongoing information about emails, you know, what to do if you get a fraudulent one and viruses and things like that, and information about the people involved in the Institute on Rehabilitation Issues. And let's see. Boy, those things have long, long names to them. And one of our former people, Chris Boone, is chairing one of those, too. That was kind of nice to get that information. And then the managed care and fee-for-service health plans information and webcast information, information about clients with secondary disabilities. That was one of the things we had asked for last time, and I'm pleased that we received that. Information about Staff Appreciation Day, and the memo to the Nebraska Board of Optometry about our role in providing low vision service. Has there been any feedback from that at all?
No.
Okay. And then, of course, the letters about the rule. Veterans Day message from Governor Johans. Information about the Division for the Blind being established in California. Social Security reimbursements.
Barb, you're putting the dog to sleep.
I know, I noticed that.
That's not me.
He's snoring.
And then information about friends and the questionnaire that we hope to talk about concerning the director's evaluation to pass along to the staff. Biennium budget narratives and all the reports, the quarterly reports on finances. And the thank you from Candy Larson concerning Home Teaching Plus, and a letter from the client and one of the other staff people, and information about Pearl becoming president of the NCSAB and that kind of thing. Let's see. And the information about the changes in not needing to do the form for some supported employment. Will it be incorporated into something else then, or how's
yes,
that?
The data that report covered is all part of the statistics that we put into the feds. So yeah, it's
okay,
all incorporated in other existing reports.
Okay, I figured it would be.
Mm-hmm.
And the information about the state treasurer having her electronic way of getting information, and I'm really glad that, you know, we're being involved in making sure that they don't go off and do something inaccessible. And I believe the White Cane Proclamation, we're glad to have that continuing to happen, and I'm glad that there were people there for the receiving of it. Ordinarily I've gone to that. I wasn't able to this year because I had a conflict, but I'm glad that did get done. And the August-September newsletter from the transition team and the ongoing center evaluations, information about getting discounted prescription drugs through Kansas City. And we got some information about signing on as a guest on the website, but do we know yet whether that's a workable thing or?
No, a couple of staff people were going to be looking at that, but I haven't heard anything back on that.
Okay. And the new mileage rates and...
new mileage rate is dropping.
Yeah,
yes.
That's what they say. Doesn't really make sense.
Okay.
And the Patriot Day announcement, financial assistance for technology through that Association of Blind Citizens. And that is pretty much the list. And, you know, so there's a lot of stuff that does come through to us and that is available. We just always try to make sure at these meetings that people are aware of that, because what we do is public, what we receive is also.
I just have one comment about that. As
okay.
long as that list was, you need to know that, I mean, we always try to give you, you know, the key points and key things of things.
Yes.
But for example, with NIS, you didn't see anywhere near the exchanges, the emails and phone calls that I did ongoing throughout the thing with Tom Conroy and with Lori McClurg and with the J.D. Edwards people. You know, we've mentioned the staff that have been involved, and especially Jonathan, but I just think you need to know it's really been a lot of time. So for the record, I want you to know that.
And we appreciate both the time that you have put in and the time that you take to be selective about what you send to us, because, you know, we're not into micromanaging, and we really don't need everything that goes across both directions and that kind of thing. So we do appreciate that.
Thank you.
Okay, we have already talked about the budget. Is there anything else that we need in the way of dealing with that? I hope we won't have to do anything about the, you know, the 90% thing or whatever. I hope that won't happen. And on the website, we've already talked about that. Sam, is there anything new on that that we haven't already talked about? Okay, and then the Friends of the Commission, you know, in the...